go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down.
Pirates. Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it.
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
We will get them on. I can promise you that.
Hit it, Trample, all night long in Eastern North Carolina.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
It was an unbelievable atmosphere. I've coached a long time in a lot of great places, and I don't think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. There were some times where it was deafening in there.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome into Pirate Basketball Overtime here on the Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates, and your home for the best ECU hoops coverage. East Carolina falls to the Charlotte 49ers 67-52 on Saturday afternoon at Halton Arena. The Pirates trailed just 26-24 at halftime, but in the second half and really throughout the game, it was an all too familiar story. The Pirates simply cannot shoot the basketball. RJ Felton led ECU with 20 points. But no other Pirate had more than two field goals in the game. ECU just six field goals in the second half as 14 of the Pirates' 28 points after the break came from the charity stripe. But, we'll dive into some more mind-boggling and alarming numbers throughout the show. But right now, I'd like to welcome in from the state of Connecticut, my co-host, Matt Semenza. Matt, how are you?
Bubba, how's it going, my friend? Obviously another frustrating performance yesterday, and coming into this week, you and I spoke last Sunday, and we both felt like, hey, this is a huge week for ECU basketball. You had three games, two of which were at home, another in the state of North Carolina, and you really felt like it was a chance to seize some momentum and to really show what kind of team you have. And unfortunately, I think we're now at the point, there's enough of a body of work where we do know exactly where we are as a basketball team. And that is, we're clearly not a team that can win in the top third of this conference, maybe even the top half of this conference. And right now we're kind of working our way back towards the bottom, sort of a bottom feeder in the American Athletic Conference. And that's very frustrating to see. And like you said, basketball is a make or miss game. And right now we simply cannot shoot the basketball. And it's not going to get any better until we start to shoot it at a much more efficient field goal percentage. So that's just a very frustrating, week for me to watch this team.
Yeah, we had some momentum coming off a win at Wichita State and then an overtime game. You found a way at home against Temple. But after those, I guess it was the overtime that we did after the Temple game, and we said that, yes, we're excited about those two victories, but in order to beat South Florida and then Charlotte, who were two of the top three or four teams at this point in the league, and now I guess tied for first at 8-1 are those clubs. We were going to have to shoot the basketball better, and that simply did not happen. East Carolina, I think in the last three games, no more than five makes from beyond the arc. 4 for 28, 5 for 22, 4 for 21, a total of 11 out of 73, comes out to 18%.
Yeah, that is simply just a terrible number. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. You're not going to beat anybody shooting the basketball, you know, shooting that percentage from three. You know, it's such a perimeter game now in college basketball. If you can't shoot from behind the arc, you're going to struggle. And for me, Bubba, like, this week really made me think bigger picture for Pirate basketball, as opposed to just looking at it one game at a time. It's really highlighted to me sort of the mismanagement of this roster. And, you know, it made me really evaluate recruiting, the type of player we're recruiting. It made me evaluate, are we recruiting enough for the portal from the portal versus high school? There are lots of teams in the country that are doing more with less resources. And when I say resources, I mean financially and otherwise. So to be here in a situation where you just don't have any shooters on the floor, that's not acceptable. So I feel like we're kind of morphing back into like what we saw this fall with Pirate football. The state of our programs and just, I think Mike Schwartz is learning some of the same lessons Mike Houston learned, where the portal is your friend, you know, it's not your enemy. So we need to use it.
Yeah, obviously, when you look at East Carolina's three-point shooting, 362 Division I teams, ECU, after Saturday's loss against the Charlotte 49ers, the Pirates ranked 339th, 29.2% from three. And in AAC play, even worse, 27.5%, which is dead last, 14 of 14.
Yeah, and you know, you'd like to think that when you get, you know, at least halfway into conference play, you're going to start to peak and play your best basketball. But what you're starting to see, I feel like, is this team almost go backwards. And that type of shooting, you know, like I said, you're just not going to beat anybody like that. I mean, maybe you squeak out a win. I mean, who do we beat? We beat Temple this week. Okay, Temple is now 1-7 in the conference. We beat Wichita. They're 1-8 in the conference. So that's who you're going to beat with that type of offense. And, you know, but you might as well, if you're going to shoot like that, you could forget beating anybody of significance. So very frustrating.
To your point, this was a problem a year ago. The Pirates ranked 306th nationally in three-point shooting. So this is something that I was hoping would be addressed, you know, throughout the offseason in recruiting. But, you know, Quentin DeBouge, that has certainly not helped matters. However, you know, when Quentin's played, he's not shot it great. 13 out of 50, 26%. Last year, he made 33 three-point field goals. So he's one, if he was playing, he would probably give you a third guy that had 30 plus makes from three. You have Brandon Johnson and RJ Felton leading the way. Let's hone in on Brandon. Brandon had been so consistent. Yesterday, unfortunately, just played a season low of 23 minutes, just the fourth time this year he's played less than 30 minutes. And all those other games, those other three where he had failed to play 30 minutes, came in the first five or six games of the season. BJ, there was a reason for that. He suffered a hip injury. Coach Schwartz could not elaborate on that in the post game. Just said he tried to come back in. And when that happened, he could simply not go. But BJ, over his last three games, really struggled. 4 out of 20 from the floor. But of those 20 field goal attempts, 17 have been threes. So he's given you essentially nothing inside the arc.
Yeah, and I think Brandon's kind of at the point, Bubba, you know, he's really struggled recently, and he's really at the point where he needs to figure out some other ways where he can contribute to this team when his three-point shot is not falling or when it's not available. you know, he, I think when you look at his game this year, when he's most successful, he's knocking down threes from behind the arc. And, but when he's not able to get those quality shots, or when they're not falling, you know, he's kind of just disappearing from the game. So he's going to have to find a way to contribute, you know, and have a positive effect on this team in other ways, whether it's rebounding, blocking shots, moving the ball, playing great defense. And right now we're not getting that, and that's frustrating. And but you know, he's your team leader, and listen, I'm sure he would say the same thing. Right now he's not playing well, and he's got to play better for this team to have a chance.
RJ Felton is one of only two Pirates to have more than 13 made threes, and he's the only guard to have more than 13 threes, as the others, as I mentioned, Brandon Johnson. I believe they have something like 38 and 40 makes, respectively, from beyond the arc, somewhere in that neighborhood. Don't have the numbers in front of me. But RJ, give RJ credit. He battled yesterday, 8 out of 18 from the floor, 20 points, knocked down a couple of big threes when Charlotte was seizing the momentum, and he silenced the crowd, did his best to keep the Pirates in it. He had 11 of those 20 points in the first half, as he had nearly half of the points that ECU scored in the opening 20 minutes. And then in the second half, RJ and Jaden Walker were leading the way when the Pirates had just 6 field goals in the half. And I knew it was bad, and I did not realize it was quite that bad until after the game, and I looked at the numbers. On a positive note, after going 0 for 4 in the first half, ECU was 14 out of 14 from the charity stripe in the second.
Yeah, and that's great to see. I mean, because that was an area, a huge area that we needed to improve. So it's great to see that. Unfortunately, everything else seemed to fall off. But to your point about, you know, Felton, I mean, I think he brought it yesterday. He definitely was. he was definitely operating at a higher level than the rest of the players on this team. And, you know, he's really the only guy who can create a shot off the dribble, you know, in the mid range. He can get to the hole. And, you know, when he gets that 3-point shot falling, he can be, you know, a very explosive player. So he's a guy that can do that. He can create a shot. But I think one of the issues, and, you know, you have right now, is you don't have a lot of guys who can create shots. When things get tight, when the defense really clamps down, especially in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the game, it's almost impossible for this team to get a shot off. And so, again, that kind of comes back to recruiting. You know, I had high hopes that Cam Hayes would be that type of guy. But listen, I don't want to say anything, you know, too negative, but Cam Hayes has been a disappointment. He's now been available for, you know, a good portion of the season. There's no reason for him to be playing like this. I certainly expected more, and without people stepping up, this is who you are. So these guys really have to look at themselves in the mirror and figure out, how can we play better basketball?
Elaborating a little bit more on Brandon Johnson, we've already touched on some of this. The first part of this point made by Johnny Robertson regarding the 17 3-point attempts of his 20 field goal attempts over the last 3 games. But he also notes that Saturday was the first time in Brandon's career as a starter that he didn't attempt a 2-point field goal or a free throw, which, you know, expands and drives home the point that you were making as far as, you know, needing to make something happen inside the arc.
Right, yeah. And Johnny Robertson, man, Johnny always brings these great stats. So thank you, Johnny. We really appreciate your contribution to the show. I mean, that's – Johnny's always bringing it. But, yeah, that's exactly right, Bubba. It does sort of highlight that point that, you know, you have to find other ways to contribute to your team. And if your shot's not falling, or if you can't get it from behind the perimeter, you need to do other things. And so – but it does make me wonder, you know – that's also falls on the shoulders of the coaching staff. Hey, we need to get this guy involved in the offense. We need to get him shots. why not post him up a little bit? You know, why not try something different with him to get him into the flow of the game? That does fall on the shoulders of the coaching staff too. So right now, you know, Mike Schwartz has a major challenge on his hands because there's a lot of basketball left. He's got to figure out how can I get some more points out of this offense? Because right now it's just abysmal.
Yeah, we'll talk in more depth later in the show before we wrap things up regarding the Pirates' remaining regular season schedule that has 4 home games, 4 away games. Next up will be UTSA next Saturday. The Pirates do not play midweek as this is their open date. You know, stay tuned as we look forward to hopefully having a member of the Pirates coaching staff on the show this week. Looking forward to that. Potentially Reggie Williams, you know, the former NBA standout that played alongside Steph Curry and led the NCAA back-to-back seasons during his days at VMI in scoring and points per game during those consecutive years. So hopefully that will work out to get Reggie on the show. Taking a look at the team numbers from yesterday's game on the Pirates, as I mentioned, just 17 field goals, 17 out of 52, 32.7%, 4 out of 21, 19% from 3. ECU, 14 out of 18 from the charity stripe, 77.8. Meanwhile, you had the Charlotte 49ers, 24 out of 53, 45.3. The Pirates, as they've done all year for the most part, defended the 3 well. ECU, we talk about the struggles in shooting the 3. The Pirates ranked 34th nationally in 3-point field goal defense, 30.7% is the opposition. And in AAC play, the Pirates ranked 2nd of 14, 29.6%. So now here's hoping that continues, and then the Pirates will find a way to get some points, you know, be it from beyond the arc or elsewhere, because yesterday and here of late, that simply has not been happening. The 49ers absolutely, you know, destroyed ECU on the glass, 42-25, 12-7 on the offensive boards. 49ers had 14 assists. ECU had 6, and I guess that should not be surprising given the way ECU has been shooting the basketball. But that has really been a trend here lately, and we talked about how well South Florida shared the ball, and it wasn't just them making shots, but you know, even when shots did not go down, and loved the way the Bulls passed the basketball, ECU did take good care of it. So that was a plus, and 8 turnovers. However, you still had, you know, a few silly ones, in my opinion, that were unforced. You know, just a bad pass or maybe a mental lapse. Charlotte, on the other hand, had 11 miscues. The 49ers outscored East Carolina 34-22 in the paint. And although this is not on the screen there, I think second chance points was something like 14-7, but that is not part of the stat package for ESPN.com. And taking a look at the individual numbers, you had R.J. Felton as the lone Pirate in double figures. R.J. finished with 20 points and 5 rebounds, 8 out of 18 from the floor in 38 minutes. Next best was Jaden Walker. I think all 9 of those points, at least 7, but I think maybe all 9 came in the second half. And the majority of those were in the first 9 to 10 minutes of the second half. I think ECU went on a little 7-2 spurt to start the second 20 minutes. And by doing so, built a 3-point advantage at 31-28. Jaden in 18 minutes. Again, 9 points, a rebound, a block shot for the Iowa State transfer this in his second year with ECU. Sear Malonga, how about Sear? Sear had 6 points in 8 minutes. Also pulled down a couple rebounds. He scored the game's first points on a dunk on ECU's initial possession. Brandon Johnson, 3 points, Let's see. Brandon finished with 5 rebounds. And then you had Cam Hayes had 2 points. Ezra Sarr came off the bench. Ezra got into foul trouble, which really hurt ECU in the second half, where we had to utilize a very small lineup. You had Brandon that was injured, Ezra in foul trouble. The tallest guy on the court, I believe, was Quentin Dibunje. And so ECU had no one taller than about 6'5 or 6'6 in the game. And as Coach Schwartz noted in the post game, you know, it was effective for a minute or two. But Charlotte was really able to exploit that, and ECU did not score for about 5 or 6 minutes, which has been a all too common theme. And as a result, Charlotte was able to take what was a 1 or 2 point lead and advance it to, you know, push it out to 14, 15 points and really put a fork in the Pirates. I think it was a 4-point game at, somewhere during that juncture, about midway through the second half. You'll probably recall this, Matt. You know, we took a very ill-advised shot by Caleb LeCount, and 49ers come down, drain a 3, and then, you know, in about a 2 or 3 minute stretch, it went from a 4-point game to a double-digit deficit.
Yeah, and that was the death punch right there when that happened. And, you know, just to kind of go back for a second to one of your points, Bubba. It's these stretches you're seeing for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes at a time where you don't have a field goal. I think it was the other night against South Florida, if I'm not mistaken, where we actually I don't know if I've ever seen this before, and I watch a ton of basketball. It took 6 minutes from the start of the game to actually have our first field goal. Am I right about that, Bubba? It took 6 minutes, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
So we scored. Sir Malonga had a dunk on our opening possession.
Against South Florida, I'm referring to.
I'm sorry. I was looking at something, but yes, we did not have a field goal in the first 5+ minutes, maybe 6 minutes against USF.
Yeah, so it's those stretches that kill you. And let's just look back at that game for a minute. Just to kind of get off Charlotte for a second and look back at the South Florida game. So you start off the game with that virtually a 6-minute stretch with no field goals. You then get it to 10-10, or roughly maybe 12-10. You then have another bad stretch where they go to like 20-10, right? Then you tie it back up and you have another stretch where it goes to 30-20. So you kept seeing these outrageous stretches without a field goal, and you know, that is where, as a coach, you have to draw something up. You have to have something in your arsenal to get out of that kind of stretch. So listen, we're seeing really poor shooting from the players right now, and I don't want to continue to harp on that. I think I've said it enough, but as a coach, when your team gets into a 5-minute stretch without a field goal, that comes back to you. You need to be able to draw something up to get a quality shot or at least get to the free throw line. And we're just seeing it way too often.
No doubt. And an alarming statistic that jumps off the page about yesterday's game in 25 minutes. And that was, you know, probably ranking low as far as the minutes played in a game by Ezra this year because of that foul trouble, but still, just 2 field goal attempts, and he did get to the line 3 times, knocked down 4 out of 6, but just 6 points and 2 field goal attempts for Ezra Sarr. So between he and Brandon Johnson, you had 9 points and a combined 6 rebounds. Just 1 rebound, however, for Ezra, and that can't happen.
Definitely can't happen. And what more can you even say about that? I mean, you know, 1 rebound from your power forward, that's again, it's just not a winning formula. So, you know, big decisions ahead for Mike Schwartz. And I do think it's really good timing to have a few days off this week where you can kind of, you know, just get back to having quality practices and try to get some of these problems remedied, because right now it's kind of like you plug one hole in the dam and two other three holes open. So good week for some time off.
Undoubtedly. And taking a look at the 49ers, you know, really like the Virginia transfer, Milicic. In 31 minutes, he had 12 points, 10 rebounds, so a double-double for the Croatian. And in Milicic, I think coming in, he was averaging 13 points and 8 rebounds. Also had 5 block shots. And then there at times, you had Pirates who were 6'3 or 6'4 challenging the 6'10 Milicic, and it did not end well. He was 3 for 6 from the floor, 5 out of 6 from the line. So not a huge night, but very productive with that double-double with 12 and 10. And I know a couple times, you know, he had knocked down a key three, you know, or another one of those three buckets was probably about a 15-foot fadeaway on the baseline that we defended pretty well, just a heck of a shot. So at 6'10", he's very versatile. He came into the game shooting, or after this game, rather, he's shooting about 38% from three, which is tremendous for someone of his size and a guy that has made somewhere between 35 and 40 threes on the season. Also for Charlotte, you had Patterson. Patterson had 16, and DeSean Jackson in 29 minutes. 8 points and 7 rebounds. So I talked about how the Pirates in the front court with the guys that lead the way, and you did have 6 from Sir Malanga that you can throw in there. But the Pirates' top 2 front court players in Brandon Johnson and Ezra Saar combined for 9 points and 6 rebounds. Meanwhile, Milicic and Jackson for the 49ers combined for 20 points and 17 rebounds. And coming into this game, especially with the way Brandon has been so perimeter-oriented and the way Ezra doesn't necessarily pull down as many rebounds as you would hope at times or think he would, I was afraid that discrepancy, which really for the most part this year, that's probably the largest deficit we've seen on the glass. Seems like, I don't know if it's Florida or someone else, and there may have been one other game, but I'll go back and confirm those numbers. But very, very odd day for the Pirates from that standpoint, getting out rebounded. I think, what did I say, 42 to 25.
Yeah, and the thing about rebounding, Bubba, is a lot of times it comes down to effort and just being in the right position. And when you get out rebounded that badly, you know, that's never a good sign. And, you know, it did look to me like Charlotte was just hungrier on the glass. They seemed more aggressive. They seemed to be in better position. And so, yeah, again, the stats don't lie. You know, I mean, the stats show you exactly where you are. So got to find a way to fix it.
And taking a look, we'll go ahead and see some of the results from around the American. I'm taking a look at these stats. Charlotte, with that victory, moves to 8-1, and they're in a 3-way tie for first with number 20, Florida Atlantic, and also South Florida. So what stories there? Florida Atlantic was certainly expected to be right there at the top of the league, but Charlotte and South Florida, just remarkable turnarounds. And I say turnarounds. Charlotte, they obviously had a good season a year ago in Conference USA, but them exploding onto the scene like this with an interim head coach and Aaron Fern, who's obviously done a tremendous job after being on Coach Sanchez's staff over the last several years there in the Queen City. This was not expected, at least by outsiders. And South Florida, and with the way that staff has arrived onto the scene from Kennesaw State and hit the ground running, has been tremendous as well.
South Florida is a team that really impressed me, Bubba. I mean, they were that is a very athletic And well-coached team, a really well-coached team. Their ball, you mentioned it earlier, and you nailed it. Their ball movement is fantastic. And I mean, what they do is they do such a great job with their point guard getting into the lane for penetrate and kick. And then they kind of get you on your heels defensively. And they're great at making at the extra pass. You know, you can when you make that extra pass, you get wide open looks. And really, I was very impressed with them. Just a good team. I mean, for me, when I looking at those top, you know, having seen all those teams, just you know, watching them play against East Carolina this year and otherwise, South Florida to me was the most impressive team. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win this conference, but they are a surprise to me. And then, you know, I think the biggest surprise in the other direction is Tulane at 3-6. That was a team I was expecting to compete, you know, in the top one third of the conference, and a little disappointing season so far for them. But yeah, it's definitely a pretty stacked conference from top to bottom.
And with South Florida, that shows if you make the right hire, especially someone that can bring at least a couple, if not a few, quality pieces from his previous stop with him, as Abdur-Rahim has with USF. That shows you in this climate how quickly you can flip things.
It's easier than it's ever been to flip a team in both college football and college basketball. And, you know, I really hope right now Mike Schwartz is having that aha moment, kind of like Mike Houston did this year, where he realizes that we're in a completely different era of college basketball. You know, recruiting from high school, you know, I get it. Maybe you take one, maybe you take two. But the portal is where we're going to make our biggest improvement right now. And we've got to find a way to get into the portal and get some quality shooters. And they're out there. They're definitely out there. You know, I hear a lot of people in our fan base saying, we don't have the resources. We don't have the financial resources. We can't pay for these guys. Look around college basketball. Look around to the so-called smaller conferences that have outstanding players, outstanding shooters. You think they're paying them? Do you think they have better resources than East Carolina? The answer is no. That's just a fact. So let's find a way to get it done. And, you know, there's just no, to me, I just don't see any excuse to not be more competitive in this conference.
And this is certainly not an apples to apples comparison, but and just kind of throwing some fuel onto that fire and the frustration of Pirate Nation is when you look around the state of North Carolina, you have App State 19-4, Western Carolina 16-6, High Point 20-4, I believe 20-4, 20-4, 25, something like that. Very, very good team are the Panthers. I think all of those losses are by single digits in three of the four, or by one possession. And UNC Wilmington having a nice season, as they so often do. But that just, you know, makes Pirate fans just say, and when's it going to be our turn? When are we going to flip this thing? And so we still have eight games left to play in the regular season, and then obviously the tournament. And hopefully we can find a way to have a winning season. But it's at this point, with the way things are going offensively, it's looking pretty bleak, just to be honest. But hopefully Pirate fans will stay behind the team and continue to support and create a good environment at these last four home games. Because as we were discussing earlier, I mean, any of these games are winnable. I mean, Memphis included, especially with it being at home. But with the way we're not scoring, I mean, you could lose all of them as well.
Absolutely, Bubba. And yeah, I mean, I think you make a really great point. I mean, regardless of how we're playing right now, I mean, just personally, I'm going to continue to support this team. And you know, obviously, it's been kind of a negative tone today, a negative conversation based on our recent play. But you really do, you know, hope that they can turn it around. You know, at least that's my hope. And but listen, when you're struggling to get to 50 points in college basketball, it's not. It's just not going to be easy. So hopefully we can find a way to shoot the ball a little better in the upcoming weeks here.
Very quickly, as we start to wrap this edition of the program up, looking at the scores from Saturday, in addition to the game between the Pirates and 49ers, and you had 20th-ranked Florida Atlantic, 102, Tulsa 70. It was Memphis snapping a four-game skid. That's hard to believe. And the Tigers were staring a fifth straight defeat in the face, but they, after trailing the Wichita State Shockers 30-24 at the break, knocked down a buzzer beater or game winner with 3 seconds to go to top Wichita State at the FedEx Forum 65-63 after having put 112 on the Shockers in Wichita. So quite a different game there. You had Rice, which recently beat Memphis. They took down the UTSA Roadrunners in San Antonio, 80-76, and South Florida won in Denton, Texas, 60-55 over the Mean Green. You have one game taking place right now, and that is Tulane and Temple in the Big Easy. The Green Wave, 26. The Owls, 23, with just under 4 minutes to play in the first half. And tonight at 6 o'clock on ESPN2, you have SMU taking on UAB. Both of those clubs are 14-7 overall. The Blazers are 6-2 in the American, while the Mustangs are 5-3. But taking a look at what lies ahead for East Carolina, we mentioned UTSA falling yesterday to Rice. UTSA, you know, took Memphis to the wire at the FedEx Forum, lost that one in overtime after having, I think, a 10-plus point lead against the Tigers. So lying ahead for ECU, you have on February the 10th, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock tip-off down in San Antonio, or 4 o'clock Eastern, I should say, 3 o'clock Central. And then next Thursday is Military Appreciation Night at Minchie's Coliseum, 7 o'clock tip-off, as the Pirates will look to sweep the season series with the Wichita State Shockers. And then I'll go ahead and run through the remaining schedule. The Pirates, on February 18th, have their Alumni Day. So hopefully we'll see a lot of Pirate basketball letter winners out at Minchie's. That is 2 o'clock. And it'll be an ESPN Plus broadcast at Rice on February 24th on ESPNU. And then the 29th, and we have a painted white game against the Memphis Tigers. That will be an ESPN2 telecast. Following that game against Memphis, and you go to North Texas and to SMU before wrapping things up with the regular season finale and Senior Day against the Charlotte 49ers, 4 o'clock tip-off on Saturday, March the 9th. So there you have it. A quick look at what lies ahead for East Carolina in the final 8 games of the regular season. And you know, really appreciate the support of Big Ed Watkins, Ed Watkins Marine. EdWatkinsMarine.com is where you can go to find everything they have to offer. They have 2 locations in the greater Charlotte area, to serve you, Denver and Cornelius. In Denver, they can be found on North Carolina Highway 16 Business, in Cornelius on West Catawba Avenue. And they offer fishing boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, pontoon boats, engines, UTVs. Whether you're looking to purchase a boat or upgrade your overhaul your existing boat, they can meet all of your boating needs. Appreciate Big Ed and his support of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for your support, Big Ed. We definitely appreciate having Ed Watkins Marine as a new sponsor.
And then lastly, you know, a new branch, if you will, of Team Boneyard is the 23 Club, which is the NIL source supporting ECU baseball. So definitely consider giving to the 23 Club and help this baseball program stay, you know, among the elite programs in the country, and a threat to go to Omaha, you know, at any time. And you know, Pirates have consistently been in the top 15 or 20 programs over the last several years. And it's just a matter of time before they knock down that door.
Man, this is a cause I can definitely get behind right here, given to this baseball team. Such a track record of playing great baseball, great program that Cliff Godwin runs. NCAA, we need more scholarships in college baseball. You know, a lot of these guys, I mean, you have great players in college baseball that, you know, maybe they're getting a partial scholarship, right? And so more than other sports, baseball players, you know, they need the NIL support. And certainly this is a program that, you know, I'd be willing to help out with. So glad you mentioned that, Bubba. And it's a great cause.
Last note here, East Carolina women were victorious on Sunday afternoon going out to Wichita State, defeating the Shockers 72-51. With that win, the Pirates improved to 13-8 overall and 6-4 in the American. There's a log jam at 6-4, and North Texas came into the day leading AAC play on the women's side with their 7-2 mark. You also have UAB 7-3. So despite some key injuries for Kim McNeil's team, they're very much in the regular season hunt for a conference title. They've done a good job of, you know, weathering that storm on the injury front and sitting a decent spot, all things considered, here as we come down the home stretch of league play. You know, but for Matt Semenza, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime here on the Sports Objective. Be sure to follow us on social media. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. Simply search the Sports Objective, click subscribe. And when you click subscribe, if you would, ring that notification bell and click all. That way, anytime we go live or upload new content, you're alerted on your device. And then on X, you can follow us at The Sports OBJ on TikTok and Instagram. At The Sports Objective, like and follow us on Facebook as well. But again, that will do it for this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime here on The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates and your home for the best ECU hoops coverage. We'll talk to you soon. And as always, go Pirates.